Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hogan's just a racist monster truck all the time.
Is that how he gets away from scenes?
As quick as he can.
Better get away, brother!
It's showtime, folks!
This is where the big boys play, huh?
Woo! And look at Goldberg! He's ready!
Oh, hell yeah!
It's going to be the biggest battleground in the history of our sport.
Welcome to the greatest hour of our sport! It's the Coldaholic Classic Nitro Review. It's Tom Campbell. It's a Sam Driver. Eating a sour sweet. Have you swallowed it now?
Yeah, I've swallowed
it. Oh, I was going to catch you eating it.
Oh, no. In fairness, Adam should have given them before we started rolling, and then we should have done them straight away because they were very, very sour.
Adam Pacitti had a little trip to Beamish and gave us some very sour sweets before we started.
Oh, Beamish sweets, though.
I like Beamish.
Yeah, I've not been in years. We used to go on like a school trip every year when I was little. But yeah, I've not been in years. But that sweet shop, man, it's burned into your brain.
If you're not familiar, so in the Northeast, you've got Beamish, which is like a
County
real
Durham,
life.
Yeah. It's like a living museum set in the 1800s.
There's one similar in the West Midlands called the Blackwood Dry Living Museum.
It's not too bad unless you're left-handed and you're a little kid and you go to the schoolhouse, at which point like the teacher straight up one year, we were there like busted out a ruler and started smashing the desk in front of this kid and telling him he was evil.
Oh my God.
And it was like, woohoo!
Is that allowed?
It was back then.
Christ. That's terrifying.
She was like, well, if you can't stop writing with your left hand, and then his right hand handwriting was obviously terrible. He'd never used a fountain pen before. So having to use a fountain pen and his right hand, couldn't write for anything.
Oh, bless.
Started crying. Teacher then brought him in front of everybody and then was like alluding to the fact she was gonna cane him. And then it was like, but we wouldn't do that in this day and age. It was like, oh, thank God. Because we were fairly sure Matty was going to get absolutely cracked with that cane.
What was the dilemma? What was the dilemma with writing with your left hand?
It's evil.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm honored.
I think it had something to do with initially being the hand of the devil, and then it became, well, I think it was like, well, the regent, like the king or queen, is right-handed.
Oh.
And it became one of those things.
So then once the queen was all right with it, then...
I have no idea.
Well...
Basically, schools were bad and are still bad here, but I don't think they're as bad as that anymore.
No, we don't beat people senseless for being left-handed. At least the teachers don't.
Yeah. I mean, we might be getting back there, depending on how the government continues, but...
Bring on 2022, the year of rickets. Let's do it. Hey, less of that! Ballot 6! Let's go back to a happier time!
Yeah, Nitro number 4. Oh, wow, guys. So lucky. Amazing.
Many wow. Classic Nitro.
Not even any American males on this week. Well, they do appear in a little advert. What's the point of even doing one?
I was very upset.
We should just call this the Classic American Males Review.
Do you know what? I know who'll be up for that. My new friend on Twitter, Scotty Riggs.
What? What?
Scotty
what?
Riggs.
What?
My mate.
What?
My mate, Scotty.
Scotty Riggs?
My mate, Scotty Riggs off American Males.
You're just chatting with Scotty Riggs?
Chilling with Scotty Riggs.
You're just going to drop that in conversation
just
now?
Just going to drop that name in, me and Scotty Riggs.
Are you going to join? Is it going to be a new American Males?
Well, I might
wrestling?
Pitch us three become the American
the
Males.
The Tom American Males?
Well, the Tom and Sam American
Males. No, just the Tom American Males.
Well, look, here's the thing.
I'll sing the theme tune.
Well, do you know what?
American Males, Tom American Males. And Scotty Riggs is all oiled up, gyrating next to you.
Oh, he'd be up for that.
Oh.
He did his first sort of Zoom fan meeting the other weekend. And he said, I'll tell you what he said, because I mentioned him behind the curtain. I mentioned, hey, I'm from Coldaholic. We do a Classic Nitro review. We were talking about you. Come and have a chat with us, Scotty.
All good things. All good things.
Because I'm a little bit shy.
Your theme's a little bit... questionably lyrically built, but brilliant.
I'm a little bit shy Burns getting out, so I like messaging people and just going, hey,
yeah, the balls on this, man.
Come
the sheer
on down. And he said, I'm doing my first ever Zoom gimmick thing tonight. Guess I'll figure out how to do it properly. This old sumbitch likes to keep shit single. Simple, lol. If it goes well, we can set something up over the next couple of weeks. So there you go.
We could be sat watching an American Males match.
With Scotty Riggs.
With Scotty Riggs.
Be rude not to.
Tom, this is like... Oh my God, this is like the childhood dream.
Manifest destiny.
The boyhood dream has come true. I'm going to be watching wrestling with Scotty Riggs.
Manifest destiny, baby. Manifest. It'll happen. It'll happen. I'll bend
it. American males.
You can write our theme.
We need to. It needs to happen. It needs to happen.
There you go. I wouldn't say
I'll bring you in the stripper oil that week.
Well, same as every week then. Just standard week. That's down the road. We're watching every episode of Nitro until its end or ours.
In order.
In our chronological order, week by week. So you heard yesterday, you heard the Monday Night Raw that was on at the same time as the Nitro we're going to watch today.
Yes, so we're going head to head with the podcast,
we
basically.
We certainly
same
are,
as
essentially.
Raw and Nitro.
Yeah.
We talk far too much crap in these. It's good that we can clean house a little and be like, so here is what we're doing. We're not just talking about Alex Wright and American males.
We might do mostly that. Mostly. It's all Mulligan and O'Hare references on the classic Raw review. So it's good that we've got our own shit going on. So the ratings are in for last week for Nitro and Raw.
Yes.
Raw 2.7. Nitro 1.9. So Nitro had a weak win, and it was a weak win in every sense of the word. But we're all back in the lead.
They need to get some big names on the go here. It's getting a bit old. It's getting a bit boring. It's getting a bit stale, Eric. What are you doing?
Oh, do you know what? You might have to pull out the big guns this week. So, Ric Flair.
Yeah, he sure does.
We're going to go through this week's episode of Nitro. Just a few notes from this week in the wrestling on the WCW side of things. Four Brawl did a 0.48 buy rate, which would be the lowest any Hulk Hogan WCW pay-per-view has ever done.
Yeah.
So the bloom is already off of the bros, brother.
Which, I mean, looking at it from the outside, even then in the mid-90s, the Dungeon of Doom was hokey. It was childish. There was no wonder. It didn't really feel there was much going for that show in general. We had the War Games, obviously, but
It felt like a one-match show, didn't it? The old War Games.
Yeah. It was a bit of a naff show, and we kind of had all right matches peppered in. Nothing like amazing, but then it just kind of ended on that big wet fart.
Yeah. The next snap heard round the world.
Yeah.
It'd give Giant a finisher, which he can do. Just the quick move your arms, shake your arms.
Bit of the vice grip. Bit of squeeze the head, bit of bulge in the eyes and screaming, and then
quick rubber to squeezy. Hogan's down. Hogan and Savage were in Titusville just 2 days before this at the opening of Jim Duggan's gym.
Nice.
Which sadly isn't called Jim Duggan.
Yeah, it should just be called Jim Duggan with like GYM Duggan.
This is the same, obviously around the same week.
Oh, and you could have had a little 2x4 with a face on it. Oh my God, Jim, what were you doing?
He's missed a trick before he has. Johnny B. Badd has suffered injured ribs during a match in Florence against Dallas Page. He'll be out for a few weeks. Back in time for Halloween Havoc, though, so don't worry.
Yes, Halloween Havoc fast approaching, of course, as we sit here halfway through October.
Flair also back before the pay-per-view, he's had an operation to remove a cataract from his eye.
Yes.
They say they've taken the cataract out, but left the glimmer in.
It was, It was like last week, I think, that Flair had an actual eye injury and they were playing up somebody else having like stitches in their eye that hadn't had stitches in their eye.
Yeah.
So they just kind of took, Flair injured his eye. Let's just use that for this guy.
Basically passing that around.
Yeah.
There's a funny story floating around about Eric Bischoff.
Yeah.
This comes from the Wrestling Observer. The big joke going around is that when Eric Bischoff met Sabu at the Miami tapings, he brought up having grown up in Detroit watching his uncle wrestle and then talked about seeing Sabu's uncle lose the title to Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
See the mistake that he's made here.
Confusing. Yes. I mean, it might be the biggest mistake you can make to the parties involved here.
ever so slightly. The Sheik and I and Sheik are different people.
Yes, and the Sheik is watching. Regarded as one of the toughest shooter-style brawler, traditional, classic, old-school wrestlers there is. The guy pioneered like a more daring style. It went over very well in Japan. Like, he was known for being a brutal wrestler who could put up with a lot of punishment and dole it out as well, both in and out of the ring. And then you compare him with the Iron Sheik, which, again, Iron Sheik, very, very good kind of run in the 80s, but two very, very different people, and you don't want to confuse them to old Sabu, do you?
Iron Sheik is a good shooter. You just have to stand still while he gets towards you.
Yes, whereas the Sheik would rip your arms off, pass one to Sabu, and then they would both beat you to death with it.
Very accurate. WCW has banned banners and placards from Nitro tapings after what happened at Johnson City. This is not a ban that will stick.
Wait, was this after last week? With the we want it raw?
That was one of the signs. That got booted.
Oh, my God.
Other signs.
Given it, like, the fact in 3 years' time or 2 years' time, Bischoff is going to be walking down the aisle with the Vince Fears rate of Raw Fears ratings
exactly.
Sign. Like, pulling that off a fan.
Other signs that were banned from that particular show and Saturday night were Malenko versus Guerrero, Matt Classic. Who's the man? Paul Orndorff, just ask Vader. And WCW, get a clue, read the Observer.
Oh, God.
Imagine them going down the smarky route. Surely they wouldn't do that.
No, not at all. The thing is, I kind of get it when there's blanket bans on signs and stuff at wrestling shows, because especially if you're paying a lot for a ticket and there's somebody in front of you with a sign, it can be annoying. It can be, especially if you're on the floor. Mm. Like the Raws I've been to where I've been on the floor, the second people come out, everybody's got to kind of get to their feet to see anything. But then if the signs... And usually they've got people at ringside kind of go, get your sign down, get your sign down, get your sign down. But like when they're just stood like this and there's four in a row and you can't see and it's like 120 quid for that seat. And it's like, cheers, thank you. Yeah, wonderful. But at the same time, they're only banning it reactionary, aren't they? So
did you ever take a sign to a wrestling show?
No.
Never?
Nah, I'm not like quick enough to write funny signs. So
me and my younger brother, when we were in Florida many years ago, we got to go to a TNA Impact taping.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. And I drew a nice cartoon image of Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
He was the guy at the time with all the belts on and stuff. Very proud of it. And my brother made a sign, because he's a West Bromwich Albion fan.
Yes.
That said WBA on tour in big letters. And there's an episode of Nitro. I think the main event is something like Sting versus Christian Cage versus Samoa Joe versus maybe Scott Steiner.
Oh,
maybe
AJ
Styles. This is Impact, yeah. And there's a bit on the show where Sting's on the turnbuckle after winning. They cut to the crowd and there's bloody Mike in his West Brom shirt. WBA on tour. He got on the show.
If
you can
didn't.
Find that, do you know what? If you are an Impact, if you can find that, actually it might be on Impact Plus. I'm going to find it, see if I can send it to him.
Do it.
Yeah, if you find it, unless you find it before me, in which case, thank you. But that's the only other time I've taken a sign to a show. I feel like it's an art form that doesn't exist anymore.
Yes, I think it was, especially toward the late 90s, it was golden, just pure golden. And there were so many signs they couldn't do anything about any of them. It was just,
it was a good time.
Yeah.
Let's get into this week's Nitro. So,
do we have to?
We have to, mate, I'm afraid. This is part
stuff
of
stuff happens, nothing really happens. There's your
we
Nitro review.
We have to talk about
crisps,
the nothing.
Which crisps are the
no,
best?
No, we can't. We can, look, if we drift onto crisps, then that's an organic drift. we have to stay somewhat on the path. But we can veer
if a good looking
service station.
Hit
if we
me
come
with
past,
some, hit me with some disco.
If we come past, if we come past a metaphorical Weatherby, we can call in. Eric Bischoff, Bobby Heenan, and Mongo, and Pepe wearing a saddle.
Yes, wearing a
on
saddle.
Commentary.
And Bobby Heenan mocks him, but Mongo's like, "It's all right. I know you want to ride him." But Bobby calls him a tarantula with a saddle.
I like Bobby constantly referring to him as a tarantula.
Yes.
It's adorable. Yeah. Our opening match is indeed Alex Wright versus your friend of mine, Disco Inferno.
Disco Fever.
Disco Fever. Disco Fever.
What's he gonna tweet next?
Something about how me and Ross are a disgrace to the wrestling industry, probably. This is Glenn Gilberti. He started wrestling in 91 around Georgia. Do you know, Sam Drovo, who came up with the Disco Inferno character?
I've read about the, like, who is it?
Raven came up with the Disco Inferno character.
It kind of, I can see it from Raven. Mm-hmm. Like he's very sarcastic as a person, and everybody hates Disco. Yeah. Or at least at this time, everybody despises Disco. Disco's long been dead. So
that was the plan.
Yeah.
So Raven showed Disco Inferno, or Glenn Gilbert at that point, video footage of Johnny Holiday from Calgary, yeah, and saying like, this guy really isn't leaning into the gimmick as much as, say, you could.
Yeah.
And that was where it was born. The name Disco Inferno came from that meeting. Obviously a song by the Tramps.
Yes. I mean, when you look at Disco, it's almost commendable back then, because he is, like, as annoying and crap as that gimmick is, he is trying to give it his all with, yeah, the booty shaking and being as much of a general dick that the audience don't want to see as possible. But then you've got Alex Wright just coming out and proper like diving to the outside and being all exciting and, oh man.
You know what? And I agree with you. Like, Disco really, like, as annoying a gimmick as it was designed to be.
As a kid, I hated him because my dad hated him. And it was just like, you knew he was going to get beat usually. Mm. Or like, if he'd win, it would be via cheaty means. Mm. But it was like, you know, you kind of wanted to see him get his comeuppance because he was always, yeah, a bit of a dick. And it kind of works well as an old-fashioned heel in that sense because, you know, he got that side of it where it's like, you just got to make him hate you. You've just got to make him hate you.
And that was what they did. And, yeah, and it was beautifully done. And he worked beautifully as a heel throughout his entire run.
Yeah.
And fair play. He knows his audience. He knows his audience. So Alex Ryan, Disco Inferno kicking us off. Disco jumps right before the bell, in case you weren't sure if he was a bad guy.
He jumps him just to make sure.
Yes. Dancing like a goof while he's cheap-shotting him all the way through. Wright bounces back. Gorgeous missile drop kick. Lovely spinning wheel kick. Wild plancher to the outside. This Alex Wright cat's a bit good, isn't he?
Yeah. So Alex Wright is good. He's just kind of getting in there and really showing, you know, the skills that he's got. That as a younger talent, the more energy that he's got. Like he's just very interesting to watch now because I never really thought much of him back in the day. But when you see him now, it's like, man, like he could actually, you know, if they featured him a bit more, which they're going to kind of start to do, he does run with it. And it's like, who is this German guy out of nowhere? And he's just kind of nailing it. And he's super young and it works.
What did you make of, there was the move sort of midway through this match where it looked like Disco was going to hit him with a belly to belly overhead.
Yes.
And I don't know whether they ran out of room in the ring. And
when he kind of goes into the ropes?
Yeah, like a flapjack instead.
It almost catapulted him to the top rope, didn't it? It looked a bit stinted, but it was a bit like, dicey. Okay, yeah.
It's a touch ropey, wasn't it? Yeah. I was a little bit nervous just watching that. Everybody was all right, though. End of the match comes when Disco takes a little too long dancing and gets caught with a backslide for the three. Jobs are good, and Alex Wright picks up a W.
The Bischoff misses the one count as well. The referee goes down and counts one on the landing, and then Bischoff goes, one, two.
The bell's already
and
gone.
The crowd, I think, missed it as well. And then the bell rings, and it's just kind of like...
Do you ever get those moments in wrestling where you think you hear a three count, but you don't?
Yes.
Like that weird sort of phantom three
count.
When
the ref hits the mat hard with that left hand when they plant it before, there's so many times I've been sucking into one, two, three, kick out. And it's been like, what?
Yeah. I thought that might have been me. I'm glad.
I get it sometimes as well.
I'm glad it didn't catch this. All the best people are, including Eric Bischoff. Thoughts on our opening match then?
You know, it was all right. It was, you know, it was nothing to write home about. Like it was went out there, did what it needed to do, right? Mm. Got people excited, a couple of higher spots at the time, you know, diving to the outside and just sort of that energy was a bit higher than what we used to seeing at the main event level, because that tends to be a bit more slow and lumbery and hulking up. Mm-hmm. But it's going to kind of, this roadmap is going to be expanded upon very soon as we start to evolve the cruiserweight division and solidify that. But this is like, it's something you're going to see a lot of in early Nitro, is this kind of get out there, have a quick opener with a couple of exciting moments, and then go from there.
That was always the style that Bischoff wanted to have, wasn't it? That kind of car crash opening of just like, whoa!
That's it. If you kind of see the opening match, you're just flicking through the channels and they're diving to the outside and they're doing all this stupid stuff, then you kind of might be like, ooh. I'm just going to keep that on.
That's it. And it's somewhat effective. Then you bring in the stars like Hulk Hogan.
Oh, he's in a neck brace. And when we arrive, he's doing his workouts. Because, you know, you can't miss a workout even if you've got a broken neck.
I'm no expert, Sam, in fitness. Yeah. But doing neck presses with a broken neck, with a neck brace on, surely that's not the right thing to do.
I genuinely think that Hulk Hogan knows better than doctors or you, Tom.
Well, Hogan does know best.
Yeah, exactly. He had a whole TV show about it. So if he wants to stick, what is it, 10, 12 pounds of gold compared to the NWA top 40? How big is the big gold belt? If he wants to put X amount pounds of gold on his neck and have Jimmy Hart push down as hard as he can while he tries to lift up and then try to rip his collar off while Jimmy's going, no, Hogan, don't do it. Don't do it, Hulkster.
Don't do any damage to your neck, Hogan. Let me do more of those neck pushes. Pushes with you. Such a weird man.
The only time he's going to get to feel strong against him, just pushing him down.
Years of frustration, Jimmy Hart bearing down
he's
on
just
Hogan.
Just wishing it was a pillow.
Hogan hasn't missed
an
workout.
Airbrushed one, of course.
Obviously.
With Jimmy's face on it.
He can sing as he pushes it down. Hogan, as you say, Sam, hasn't missed a workout, isn't being stopped by the Taskmaster and the Stinky Giant. It takes away the aggression of a feud when you keep calling Paul White the Stinky Giant.
Yeah, but there were more instances of really childish language. And it's kind of like, well, yous have said ass before. You've kind of flirted with being a little bit more edgy. I know you're not gonna, because WCW's whole thing was, you know, family centric for so long. They're gonna get there, of course, eventually. Mm-hmm. But they're quite family centric still now. So you do have random moments with just ass, and I'm gonna kick your ass, and I'm gonna kick your ass, and kick your ass. I kicked your ass, and then Stinky Giant,
Stinky Poo Poo Giant.
Yeah.
This is where a match that lives in wrestling infamy
greatest,
is set.
The greatest wrestling pay-per-view match of all time. It results in the death of a man at the hands of Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan has to break Batman's rule and just kills a guy.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Guy. Shoves him off a roof.
Hulk Hogan announces after the Giant's monster truck destroyed Black Beauty, of course, his famous motorbike that he mentioned that time. Hulk Hogan announces he is building a monster truck and challenges the Giant to machine against machine.
It's not just any monster truck either. It's a better monster truck.
Yes.
So he's gonna hook him up front to front, and they're going to shove each other around, and Hulkamania, the power of Hulkamania, is going to destroy the Giant in a monster truck match, a first ever monster truck match. And it's going to be built by the people that built, I think I want to say Gravedigger. It was one of the big
Bigfoot 8.
Bigfoot, that was it,
which was the Giant's monster truck. More on that in a bit. But yes, and after the monster truck, machine versus machine clash, Hogan said he will put the WCW title on the line against Giant as well. So that's Halloween Havoc setting up to be quite the occasion.
Oh, yes. So yeah, it's announced they're going to have that match and then they're going to wrestle afterwards. So they're going to do a little bit of a shove round on the roof in some cars and then they're going to have a match. So what's the point of the shove round on the roof?
Because Monster trucks are in the mid 90s.
No, the shove round on the roof is because that murder is predetermined. it's premeditated.
It's going to be a nightmare on Cobo Hall in a few weeks.
Yeah, time. Hogan's getting there. He's going to, he's in the mood to kill a man.
He even says at the end he's going to lay the giant to rest right next to his father.
Was that outside the Cobo Hall?
Apparently, Andre the Giant was buried outside Cobo Hall.
Was it the street side or was it the river side? That becomes important later.
Yeah,
that becomes important much
once
later.
Once concrete, there's river. What's the difference? It's a great line. I can't wait for Bischoff to say that. Now, as a Dubsy Dub kid around this point,
yeah.
Like, were you aware of what was coming? Were you excited?
I wasn't really. I wouldn't say I was actively able to digest it at this point. I was still a bit young, so like I don't know, but I just remember seeing this years later and being like, what the fuck is this? Like, what the fuck is this? Like, are they for real? Are they actually for real? Like, I remember seeing clips of the monster trucks. They'd show it every now and then. And obviously, monster trucks were all over. Steve Austin had a monster truck. Like, there was an NWO monster truck. There's just, loads of stuff like that. But it takes the shit cake. It really does. It takes the shit cake.
It takes the shit cake. well, more on that in the weeks to come. After Randy Savage snaps into a beefy, spicy Slim Jim, Gene Okerlund is speaking to Randy Savage again. Do not be mistaken for thinking you're watching the same episode as last week.
Basically, this is going to happen a lot because it does. Yeah. But my favorite part of this promo is that Randy Savage is out there in gear. He's ready to wrestle. He's got all the tassels tied up on the side. He's got his hat on. His arms are out. He's not in his coat. He's not wearing, like a suit like last week. Savage is there to wrestle. He's in his gear.
He's good to go.
And they're kind of talking back and forth. And then out comes Luger in his gear. And it's kind of, we're going to finally get the match. It's going to happen. They get on the mic. And Luger's like, that's what people want to see is Lex Luger versus the Macho Man Randy Savage. And the crowd's starting to go, oh my God, we're getting it. We're getting Luger versus Savage. And he goes, next week. And that's it. Like what the fuck are you doing? Why have you got them both out there in the ring in their gear if they're both going to be wrestling singles matches anyway? Just do it backstage or something. Mm. But if they're both going to be wrestling singles matches, and it kind of bleeds over into this awkward turnaround, doesn't it? Because you've got, okay, that showdown, and then it goes into a match, and then there's sort of more awkward backstage stuff, and then a match, and then it bleeds over again somehow into like the fight. Oh, God.
You can hear the crowd, you can hear the energy from the crowd dissipate.
Yeah.
When they announce that this match will be in Colorado next week.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
It's kind of,
They try and bring him back because Luger then announces he's putting his title shot against Hogan, which he's apparently got, on the line in that match. And Luger also says, if Savage beats him, Luger will leave WCW.
Which ain't happening.
It's not happening. He's just got there. He's already out the door. Savage is up
Bischoff
for
Bischoff was actually planning to screw him out all along.
Yeah. Lol, bye. Thanks, friend. So very similar segment to last week. We're now going to get next week.
Whose side are you on? I'm open. I want to be the champion. Do you want to be the champion? Of course you do. Blah, 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 blah. Standard fare.
Luger and Savage at this point is an intriguing match.
Yeah, the fans want to see it. Definitely. They're cheering for it. They're ready for it. When Luger comes running down the aisle in his trunks, they're like, whoa, and they're getting really hyped for it. But it just dissipates, of course.
Eric Bischoff confirms after the break that Halloween Havoc, we will definitely have Hogan versus Giant in a machine versus machine match, followed by a human versus human match. Complete with a match graphic.
Just sitting there and having to go. We'll have a machine versus machine match and then a human versus human. Oh,
but then, it's the match graphic.
It's the two cars, isn't it? It's the two trucks.
You've got a picture of Hogan sort of badly cut out. Yeah. You've got a picture of Giant that's a bit too far away, so he looks tiny. And then they morph into monster trucks.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, my God. Oh, I loved it.
Fucking amazing. Oh, I didn't know Hogan can do that.
It's his secret power. That and racism.
Into a big racist monster truck.
No, he is a big racist monster truck. That's a secret. You know the Hulk, how he's angry all the time? Hogan's just a racist monster truck all the time.
Is that how he gets away from scenes?
As quick as he can.
Better get away, brother!
weird Transformers bullshit. It's amazing. Some monster truck facts for our monster truck fans. The Giants monster truck is indeed Bigfoot 8. It's a Ford truck built by Bob Chandler in 1989.
Yes.
It's considered one of the most innovative trucks of all time. Uses computer-aided design, tube chassis, a cantilever shocks, which give the truck travel, helps soften the impact of landings on the driver. It was also the first Bigfoot truck to use the Racing Stripe paint scheme.
Nice.
You're welcome.
Have you ever watched Monster Jam?
I have.
My favorite thing about Monster Jam is still, like, whenever I see it, still to this day, when you have the winners at the end of every week and they're in like lime green neon nylon suits, and it's like, oh my God, this is the, and like 10 gallon hats. And it's like, this is the most American thing I've ever seen in my life. They just all need to be in America flag suits with America flag hats. And it would be, and then just serve them an apple pie trophy.
That's a deep joy.
That's it. And while they're jumping over things, don't have like cars for them to jump over. Just have like a hot dog eating contest.
They leap over.
They leap over that while that's happening.
Cheerleaders just hoy over them. Yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Do that. Like, I hope they get lime green tracksuits to race in, do Hogan and Giant, but I have a horrible feeling they might not.
I've got a horrible feeling they're going to be sat in the passenger seat pretending. While somebody in
what?
While people in black morph suits stand there actually driving.
Surely not. How dare you? Hogan doesn't need to drive. He turns into the monster truck.
The best thing about Hogan's truck is the arms. Come on. The fucking arms. It's just like, bite. Like, Giants is just a big scary truck, right? It's just a big evil looking truck. Cool, it's a monster truck. You know, that's, you know, but when you have a fucking big molded body with these giant arms just reaching around the front, like, what the fuck?
That coming at you, you'd be dead. Right, back in the ring. It's Sergeant Craig Pittman in action against Kurosawa.
Yes.
I'm excited to hear what Sam Driver thought of Kurosawa.
Do you want to tell us who Kurosawa is, Tom?
I will indeed. Manabu Nakanishi.
Yes. So,
who began wrestling in 86 as a freestyle wrestler and then went on to work as an actual wrestler.
So Nakanishi would go to New Japan to hone his craft as a professional wrestler. He would start there in 92. I think he won like a Super J Cup. He won like a Juniors Cup.
In 92?
I can't remember. It was somewhere around the early 90s. But then he would go and be sent on excursion because they saw something promising in him. He'd be sent on excursion to the US where he would come to WCW and he'd be wrestling as Kurosawa. Now, he would go on to leave the company and become a major name in New Japan, I guess. You know, he was a G1 winner. He was an IWGP champion. He was like a never tag champion. I think he was a six-man champ as well. Like, he had, you know, a career that spanned quite a long time. He went into MMA. He went into kickboxing. And then he came back and he retired in 2020.
He's had a hell of a run, man. Hell of a run. Only retired last year.
Yeah, I think it was due to compounding injuries as well. But he's still a beast. Like, even now when you see him, he's, like, huge.
Was a force of nature in the amateur wrestling world and beyond there. He took part in multiple Asian wrestling tournaments before he became an actual wrestler.
Yeah.
Pro wrestler, rather. He peaked in 1992 when he competed in the Summer Olympics in Barcelona.
Nice. That's cool.
It's a nice little fact about him that people tend to miss out on. But the story here is, you know, he was sent on excursion. He broke Road Warrior Hawk's arm, and that is the story that, whilst we haven't been told it on Nitro, has been told, I presume, on Saturday Night or other places.
Yes, and basically there's going to be all this feuding going on in and around that, and throughout the entire match it's like, he's going to be watching from home and he's going to be seeing famously, Nakanishi would be taught the Road Warrior workout by the Road Warriors, and you know, they, I think, you know, he got into a bit of a big beefy boy around then. But yeah, it's sort of, it's an interesting position for him to be in, and it's certainly one where he is almost a nobody on the global scene anyway. So it's just a nice get that he's on national TV this early into his career and being featured, not in a major storyline, but he's been featured.
Yeah, you know? He got Colonel Rob Parker in his corner
as
well.
They brought him up last week. They brought him up a couple of times. It's all been kind of building and building and building.
And here he is against Pittman, who's had quite the run lately.
Oh, yes.
Kurosawa pretty much dominates.
How could we forget?
He did that thing and he slid under the ropes like Metal Gear Solid. It was brilliant. At a four brawl, what a time we had. Kicks and strikes, Kurosawa dominates Pittman with. Sarge gets a backdrop to the outside to kind of get a little bit of room. Pittman fights back, doesn't have any of the flair and the flash that even this point Kurosawa has, but he holds his own. A win for Kurosawa out of nowhere with a lovely German suplex into a pin. Weird combo seeing Kurosawa and Pittman.
Yeah, it just kind of, it felt a bit like, throw them together.
Yeah.
But it was sort of, on top of that, we had afterwards, he was sort of posing in the ring and kind of just taking a moment just to pose and to sort of absorb it. And he was like putting his hands forward like that and just staring straight ahead. And then we had commentary going, quiet, he's meditating. And whenever anybody else kept trying to talk, they'd go, shh.
Representation of wrestlers from Japan in America at this point is very spotted and unusual, because on WCW we have Kurosawa.
Yeah.
We have a few more New Japan contingents coming for Starrcade.
Yes.
So it's a much prouder representation. Meanwhile, in the WWF, Hakushi, still just about there, is about to start teaming with Barry Horowitz.
This is the thing. Like, Hakushi, I think, could have been a much bigger deal had they been able to get across to the American audience that, you know, like, just because he's Japanese doesn't mean he's not. Like, I don't know what it was with them. They, I thought he was a good package, Hakushi.
Whoa, xenophobia.
Yeah, it just like, whenever I'd see Hakushi wrestlers, like, oh, he's got a unique look. He's got like a unique entrance robe, and like he moves unlike anybody else on the roster at the time. Like, he should be a bigger star. But yeah, WCW, I'd say, did more, I don't know, simply by treating them as talents, they did more in terms of representation. It might have been because there was a working agreement in place with a company that kind of had a bit more sway and kind of had a bit more power. And, you know, WCW would get something out the back end of that deal on the other side of the world by sending talent there. So I think, yeah, WCW did a lot for representation of Japanese talent. Not always great at all, like, by any means. There's a lot of very poor representation, a lot of very bad treatment of IWGP titles, just kind of disregarding New Japan storylines for certain characters. And they really kind of took the piss a bit, but we did see more Japanese talent coming through there.
It would start to, you would start to see a little bit more
Liger, right? I mean, Liger.
Yeah, well, Liger was on the first Nitro.
Yeah, first match.
First match, and you had Jushin Thunder Liger out there, which is incredible. So, like, there is a much better representation, but not perfect, actually.
Yeah.
Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman are out for a chat. Two lads that just bloody love their guns.
Again, all you had to do was add Pillman to last week's episode, and this would be the exact same promo.
Yeah.
Because it's just, well, Flair, it's just the response, but it's pretty much everything Flair said, but back from Arn. And Pillman spends the entire thing laughing maniacally and rubbing his hands together.
There was a line in here that he was...
Arn, at this point, he looks a bit younger, but the second you put those glasses on him, he's 70.
Yeah, isn't it weird?
Like, he hasn't aged. Like, go back and look at this episode. See Arn, like, he hasn't aged. When he puts those glasses on, I don't think he's changed glasses in all this time either.
I think we had a future echo in this particular piece, though. So Brian Pillman, just a few years before Pillman's Got a Gun on Monday Night Raw, runs down Ric Flair and says he and Arn will continue exercising their right to bear arms. We should have known that boy has a Glock.
It was Pillman. Pillman was the one that gave Arn the gun.
Exercise their right to bear arms and hospitalize anyone that gets in our path.
Nice.
So don't carjack Arn Anderson, even in 1995. Arn says tag team wrestling is where he excels. He's not surprised that Ric Flair is struggling to find a partner for an upcoming tag team match. So Flair saving Savage. And I don't think they've said this completely out loud, unless I've missed it. But so we're heading towards Arn and Brian Pillman versus Flair and a partner.
Yes.
The story being that Ric Flair has been such a dick bag his entire career. Nobody wants to team.
Nobody's
with
got
him.
His back, yeah.
Yeah, and so he's approached Savage, and Savage has gone, no chance, Sundance. He's apparently approached Sting at this point, and Sting's also gone, no. We'll see how that pans out.
When was the last time we saw a story like that? Because I quite like those, where a heel's
I can't find
to scramble, and it's almost like literally nobody, literally nobody. And then you might get like a young baby face either turn heel, or the bad guy learns his lesson and he's got to be friendly to people from now on, and he got like a young baby face that helps him win.
You see the sheer amount of odd couple tag teams that we have in WWE, you thought we would have seen that At least once recently.
It feels worlds apart, doesn't it? Because you're watching tag teams like in this era, and they've got double moves, and they've got, and you know, we do have that, but it mainly with the featured teams in WWE. Like the featured teams, they got their big spots. Mm. Like you can kind of, you know, in a Street Profits match, you're going to see that, you're going to see this. In an Usos match, you're going to see that, you're going to see this. But then you get to like Ziggler and Rude, and it's like, neither of them might hit the finish. Neither of them might hit a special. It could go any way. They might get rolled up.
Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky, the men of the year, are the same. They don't have a tag finisher.
It's just sort of, I don't know. I like how there's still that focus on, you know, working together and trying to overcome by any means as the team.
Yeah, and I can't think of anywhere where someone's gone, I need a hero, like recently.
Yeah.
I do like it.
Either way, Flair basically, we saw him, essentially, there was a vignette that was shot on the set of Bayshoot. There was a vignette shot on the set of Baywatch.
Bayshoot is the behind the scenes.
The WCW were guests on an episode of Baywatch, and they were sort of working out, and there was a whole promo with Savage doing some weightlifting, and then out of nowhere the Taskmaster arrives, starts shoving the weights and the bar down on Savage. Savage gets trapped and manages to roll to escape, but he can't quite get up, and Flair, of all people, is the guy that comes and kind of breaks it up, and he's checking on Randy. And everybody's like, Flair? What's Flair doing? And it's sort of like, he's learning. He's learning that you got to start being nice to people.
Got to be nice to people.
Yeah.
Talking of the Taskmaster and Randy Savage, after a plug for Saturday Night that features advertisements for Johnny B. Badd and Sting for the US title, an appearance by the Giant and the American Males. Getting a little
Time
look
17.
In. we go to one of our two main events of the evening. The recap for the rematch from the Baywatch beating, Taskmaster versus Randy Savage.
Nice.
Zodiac's ringside. He attacks Savage when he comes out.
This is just, I mean, Beefer just standing there, shaking his head and going, no, yes, no, no, yeah, no, no, no.
Would you say, no. where would you put this as one of the finer gimmicks of Ed Leslie?
Right around the U-bend. If they're all sitting right at the bottom of the toilet, then this one's right around the U-bend. Legitimately. Fucking, Zodiac is like, the worst part is that I don't like the unicorn horn. But the face paint, like, I didn't so much mind. Like, I thought the face paint, like, the physical look was cool. Mm. It was just the fact that it was the physical face paint and then just Beefer's outfit, but in black. Same tassels, just a little horn, and then he's revealed to have been a spy all along. Oh, my God.
He's working for fucking Hogan? Hell. Yes, no.
Of course he is.
He's always working for Hogan.
He's the only person he's ever fucking worked for.
Bischoff on commentary made me laugh. He said on the Taskmaster, he puts his game plan together in a septic tank. He's so low.
Oh,
odd line. I like it though. I like it. This is a friggin' scrappy affair. Taskmaster dominates with the help of Zodiac popping up. Savage comes back, driving Sullivan to the guardrail. Nice double axe handling all there. Zodiac sticks his oar in. Savage drags him into the ring. The ref tries to stop Savage from attacking Zodiac because he's not in the match. Savage shoves the ref. DQ.
Yeah, but the ref didn't give a solitary shit about any of the interference beforehand.
No. Perfectly fine with it. It wasn't
if
until
I was Savage
pushed him.
I'd be going to the back office and I'd be like, you're overturning that.
Yeah.
Or I'm walking out of here with my Slim Jim deal. Just like an Vince, and I'll start my own promotion.
Slim Jim Champions at Wrestling.
With Blackjack and Slim Jims.
When you say Blackjacks, you mean the little sweets?
I don't even know. I was just doing the Bender line.
I like that.
I've replaced hookers with Slim Jims.
Oh, of course. Slow on that one. I like that one. John, can you put Randy Savage's head on Bender doing that line from Futurama? Thanks, mate. Thank you very much. So the ref throws the match out. He shouldn't have done, but he did.
Yeah.
Enter the Giant.
He did physically touch the referee. Yeah, and in WCW, but in WCW, if you lay hands on the referee, immediate DQ, and you're fined.
Right. So actually, Bischoff did say that
they explain fine. This. Yeah. He's laid hands on an official. You are penalized for that.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of, I guess, supersedes maybe referee's discretion on any of the outside stuff, or referee being an idiot and just kind of going, well, I'm just going to look over here off to the crowd now that they're outside behind
do,
me.
Do, do, do.
Oh, look at that turnbuckle pad's a bit loose. I'm still just going to look at the crowd. They're all brawling underneath me.
As you were, Your Honor.
It's a nice sign. Rose Ed.
Enter the Giant, who walks to the ring, drops Savage with a gorgeous chance slam.
7 foot four, don't you know?
Oh, I forgot he's seven foot four.
Now, I know he's a big lad, but 7 foot four, that's Bobby.
You can't teach that.
7 foot four, Bobby.
7 foot four, Bobby. It's a big policeman. Savage gets a choke, and the beautiful choke slam by Wright as well. Paul White. Like, I love his choke slam when he was at this sort of weight.
The way he moves. Yeah. Like, he's so explosive for a giant. Like, we've never seen somebody... Like, we've seen big guys move quick. We've seen Vader.
Yeah.
Vader's kind of like the yardstick at this point, I feel, for big guys who move quick. Tenta's up there as well because he's got short explosive power from, like, sumo days. Like, Tenta up close, you kind of see him move very quickly. But... you know, Vader was the guy who was doing all the stuff a big guy shouldn't be doing. And then Paul White just comes in and takes all of that, disregards it, and he's just doing whatever the hell he wants.
And it's just
working so well.
He's so good at this point. So who can stop the mighty giant? A locker room full of absolute wrestling legends.
And his bratwurst fingers.
And his big chunky fingers. Who can stop him? Who comes out to save the day? Who the fuck are these two?
Yeah.
Who the absolute fuck are these two?
Genuinely, I was like, hang on, is that, no,
it's not. I had to put it into the group chat.
Who's that?
I had to put it into the group chat to find out who it is. So big shout.
Bischoff doesn't even seem to know.
No, he hasn't got Scooby-Doo.
Because after these two, Alex Wright comes out to kind of get involved. But even then, when Alex Wright's coming, it's like, and who's this? It's me. Alex Wright.
Don't worry, we've done some digging. We can fill in the gaps. Okay, so the first guy that eats a chokeslam, the guy with the tash who looks a little bit like a Tully Blanchard type. Thank you to Lewis House, one of our writer from the Czech Republic for this one. They recognize incorrectly Frankie the Thumper Lancaster.
Nice.
And the other guy that does a run out is Staffordshire-born lad Mark Starr. Who would go on to be one half of Men at Work in a few years.
I just thought you meant the band there for a second.
He sang the safety dance.
Staffordshire's down there, but I wouldn't call it down under.
Staffordshire is the land down under. God knows why they run out. They're just there.
I guess
they get a shoe in.
They're probably, you know, the type of people you'd have by the curtain. If they were going to be over the top with it, they might have quickly cut to somebody by the curtain going, oh my God, get out there,
Stop them. That'd have been quite nice. Alex Wright then comes out, as you say. He has a go. It gets floored. And eventually, Lex Luger just rocks up. And just cue more weirdness with Lex Luger. Just more, like, more uncomfortable body language with Lex Luger. So he walks out and he's kind of walking around as if to go, hey, you guys are cool. Like, Taskmaster's, like, patting him on the back. Like, hey, you with us?
And then, well, the entire idea is he gonna revel in this moment? And is he gonna use it as a means to attack Savage? Or is he going to help Savage? And because they've been going backwards and forwards on this, of course, you know, the last couple of weeks we've had promos from them both going at each other. We've got, you know, this moment of question. What is Luger going to do? And then Luger gets in the ring. He climbs over Savage lying there in the ring, looks down at him, and he starts, like he's about to start mouthing off to him. And then the Giant grabs him. And then we'd never find out. So the Giant attacks Luger, and it's like, what the fuck are you doing that for?
Yeah.
If he'd sided with Savage, you would have had Luger, who, I know, you know, he's not Bret Hart, but, like, you can still throw him in the way as a roadblock before he gets to any of you lads.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But alas, it didn't happen. So Giant decided to attack Luger. Luger gives a little bit of back, gives a bit of socks, but then Giant ends up chokeslam.
And then we go to a break, and when we come back, Luger has been... not thoroughly beaten down, but he's had a bit of a kick in and he's waiting for his match to begin.
Because the main event is Lex Luger versus Meng. And Luger's already in the ring, battered. Giant's
lying
gone.
There in the corner like,
Where's Frankie Lancaster? Get in there, save him!
Out sprints Meng. Meng just comes down like, right, I'm getting on this, and just starts taking it straight to Luger.
Meng just batters Luger in our main event. Well, during the main event, which Bischoff excitedly informs us that Hogan will be in Denver, Colorado next week.
Yes.
Not for Night Show. He just likes it there. He'll be on the Nitro, excited for you. Meng just, yeah, it's a clattering. Meng lands a pile driver. Luger kicks out the pile driver. We forget this is still the time where a pile driver is still like a bit of a standard move rather than a
well, this is it. It's
whole
kinda,
triangle to finish.
It hadn't quite become the DDT, you know, by SmackDown 2 Know Your Role levels where it was everybody's standard finish for a creative wrestler. It wasn't quite, you know, it hadn't become watered down per se, but it had lost its allure of being the most dangerous move in wrestling. It was still up there, but it was executed a lot more than we'd see it now. Now when somebody busts out a pile driver in this day and age, it's always like, fuck.
Yeah.
Like when Cena got pile driven, it was like, fuck. Like, I don't know, it feels, it's one of the things I do like about modern wrestling is that the pile driver is so protected now.
I like
at
that.
At the same time, I do like watching classic stuff and just watching somebody bust a sit out pile driver and just stuff that we know just would not fly today on any level.
It's 18 pile drivers keeps on going. Luger fights back after a pile driver, screaming all the way. He is the noisiest wrestler, and I blame OSW Review for pointing this out to me. Just everything.
Well, you got to do it, right? You got to make it seem like you're really laboring to fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's very noisy.
It's their fault for not having the mics down lower.
It's very true.
Yeah.
However, he gets put down with an Ionian nerve grip from Meng. Yes. This is your classic, I'm a bit knackered, wrestling ref hold, isn't it? Just going to sink two fingers and a thumb into that little part of your collarbone there.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to... I feel like that's something you do to like a dog that's going a bit mental. Like you just do that, go calm down, the dog would just go...
It's just sort of like, I guess, you know, the idea is that it would probably be cutting off oxygen to the brain, maybe.
Yeah.
So it'll probably knock you out super quick. Kind of like if you pinch that, then game over, as long as the person can't get out of it. But yeah, I don't know. I've never really been a fan of these. I like submission finishes. I want to see like a struggle. I like the figure four. I like the sharpshooter. I like the Walls of Jericho, where it's like the ankle lock, where it's just like, oh, how are they going to get out of this? Like when Benoit used to lock in the crossface and wrench it back. And it was like, there is no fucking way you're getting out of that.
Scratching and clawing.
And you're screaming at the TV going, just tap, 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 tap. And then they do. And it's like, like it's the best. Like I don't know what it is about vice grips and just general grips. Even the mandible claw, it's iconic, but the mandible claw is like, as a kid, I was like, what? So he just sticks two fingers in his mouth. It's like,
yeah.
Well, yeah, but like further, so he's just sticking fingers in his mouth. Ah.
It's true. It's only when you put a sock on the end of it.
It wasn't
people
until
really
like
pop
a while
it.
Later that was like, oh no, it goes down the throat. Okay. It's like obstructing the mouth and the breathing and stuff. I was like, okay, I get it.
But they even moved away from that in years to come, where it was just like, oh, it's a smelly
sock.
Well,
you'd see the fingers just like curved back and like here. And it was like,
I remember WrestleMania 10, it was Yokozuna versus Lex Luger. Basically, the match was a 10-minute Ionian nerve grip.
Yeah.
Because Yoko, after 3 minutes, was done.
They just lock in, rather than a standard test of strength, they just go lock in the shoulders and just grip as hard as they can until one of them falls over.
I was baffled by the fact that pretty much what happened. I was baffled by the fact that Mania 10, that Brett versus Yoko got about 4 minutes, but Luger and Yoko got about 15. That's weird.
Slammed him on the USS Intrepid.
Yeah, but you give him 90 seconds.
That's a blood feud.
Just to keep Yoko fresh.
No.
He'd be another 10 minutes of nerve grip.
No.
We lost a 10-man tag because of that nerve grip.
Ah, it's fine.
I'm furious. I've never forgiven.
Nobody was miffed. It's never been discussed
I was
again.
Furious. Men on a Mission rapped about it. They said they've got one more match. This one's in the bag. 10 men in the ring for a 10-man tag. We never got the 10-man tag.
Richard brought it up on his podcast. I can't remember which episode, but it was fascinating listening to him talk about how that all went down. And it was like, oh, we're going to have to bump that match. And it was like, oh. Like,
yeah. I was livid. Furious. Anyway, somehow Luger fights back. He counters a top rope nothing from Meng, who just flies into the middle of the ring.
Standing splash with both arms up.
But Luger's already up to his feet.
Yeah.
Luger just goes, whoop, stands to the side, throws him down, done. Luger starts to make a comeback. He's punching and kicking him in the corner. The ref pulls Luger away. Whilst this is happening, Meng is applying the golden spike given to him by the Taskmaster.
So Meng reached down by his bollocks. Pulled out what looked like a jagged piece of metal, the golden spike, and then proceeds to, as quick as referee's distracted, just kind of goes, whirp, throat punches him, and then down he goes, tucks it under him, pin. And then as he rolls out the ring, we get a nice lingering shot of him just rustling around his balls and putting the golden spike away.
I would not want to put a golden spike anywhere near my balls.
I don't want to think about where the golden spike lives in the pants region because it's quite long and it's quite thin.
I'm trying to think where you tuck it. Behind your balls, I guess.
I don't know.
Unless you have like a little pouch
maybe
inside. Yeah. Like a little pocket.
As long as it just doesn't go in the wang.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I would. I mean, Meng's tough as fuck. But to wrestle with like a spike that near your bollocks, that's terrifying.
It's got to be. I mean, like the whole thing was, it was done like, it's a bit of a shit finish, but it was like nicely orchestrated with just the quick throat punch. It wasn't like too lingering. I did like that. It was kind of like a shot of what's he doing, and then woulda, and then straight down. It wasn't like, you know, WWE where you sometimes get the really over the top pantomime.
I'm going to put this on the end of my hand.
Regal just stands in the middle of the ring and just whaps his trunks like that and just goes.
You play to the back of the room, brother.
And then pulls out and then just starts waving it around, slaps the referee with it 3 or 4 times, puts it on his hand, looks at the referee who's nodding at him, uses it, and then the ref just goes. Counts the three.
That's classic wrestling. That's classic wrestling. I'm sad we didn't get that. So Luger loses to Meng, but he's got a chance to face Savage next week. So Savage gets a DQ on Taskmaster. Luger takes a pinfall. We can tell where the political power lies in this company. Mongo, Bischoff and Heenan wrap up the show with Heenan cleaning his shoe, insinuating that Pepe did the business on it, which is
damn right.
A cute little bit that
so
wasn't
overly acknowledged. What you get for not liking Pepe, Bobby, you get shit on your shoe.
Hogan's there next week, along with the American Murals, the Nasty Boys next week. Yay. Dean Malenko.
Yes.
And Macho Man versus Luger will headline the whole show.
Beautiful.
Oh, what are we?
That's going to be a great finish.
A better Nitro.
I think it's going to be a better Nitro overall, for sure. I think we're going to see a nice match, hopefully, at Malenko. The one thing I want to know right now is, have we seen the fucking torture rack yet?
Yeah, he did it on Hogan. On Nitro 1.
Yeah.
Do you remember? Because he let go.
Yeah.
As Hogan was about to drop the arm for the third time.
I was about to say, because
Luger let go, went, I won the match!
It gets to a point where, like, you do have the torture acts put over hard by them. Like, toward, like, the mid-run of Nitro, like, when he's locking that in and properly, like, shaking and
that's how he wins
it,
the world title.
Like, yeah, that's it. It's like, they really, really put the torture rack over something strong. Because I remember as a kid, I was like, no, not the torture rack. And I remember, like, properly buying that. So it was like, there were very few things I liked about Luger, but the torture rack was one of them.
Yeah, so he's had a go with it and it hasn't got him so far. But as you say, they will get it over, like, Roma. Yeah. And he may do it next week.
Plus, he gets more buff. I don't know how it's possible, but Luger gets more buff. So
he just gets too big. Like, yeah. he looks like he's walking in toffee at the best of times anyway.
Yeah.
And it's just going to get even
worse.
He's
just got to do away with the flowy hair, and he's got to get that nice tight ponytail. And then it's like Wrestler Machine Kurt Angle, right? It just switches on in Lex's head.
Once he puts his hair in a
the
bun.
The Wrestling Machine Lex Luger.
What was the best part of Nitro for you this week? It was a rough one.
I mean, I'm always going to say Alex Wright's great, but at the same time, I don't know. I don't think it was very much redeemable on the show overall. I think my favorite thing might have been the morphing into the monster trucks. The opening wasn't terrible. The opening had its moments of like shine that the audience seemed to be getting into, especially the more daring and exciting moments. But other than that, I don't know. You know, like. Maybe the arrival of the Giant. The crowd really popped hard for it, even though it was a heel. Like, they were kind of, whoa!
Giant's crispy choke slams.
Yeah.
Very nice. I think Kurosawa was good fun here.
Oh, yeah! Yeah, we had Kurosawa. Oh, I forgot. Kurosawa's it's like an eternity of an episode. Kurosawa was great. So I think if we... Yeah, maybe we bottle him and we just go, we're going to protect you from now on. You are our boy. We're going to look out for him. we're going to take care of Kurosawa.
You'll put him in a bottle, keep him safe until next week.
And then
week.
He can go back and be Manabu Nakanishi and then go and take on the world.
Back next week for another one of these. The Classic SmackDown review is on Saturday, and a Desert Island Graps featuring AC Romero from Impact is in your podcast feed tomorrow, you lucky devil. And until we're back together, what are you working on this week?
Secret stuff.
Secret things.
Yeah.
He's working on secret projects. He is at Les Defined on Twitter. You can find him on Twitch on a Thursday night.
At 6 p.m., but I don't think I am this week because Crown Jewel.
Oh, yeah! Yes, Crown Jewel. Yes. How exciting. That'll be an ethical nightmare. But until then, he's at Let's Define on Twitter. I'm at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together, we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us. We run out of time. Don't forget to
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.